Greetings, everyone. This is the Skulls Cast. My name is Cass.
This is Millibot.
And this is episode 17, where Millibot and I talk about a game we played.
Cosmic Encounters.
It is called Cosmic Encounters.
It's from space.
Wait, Encounters?
Oh, God.
I have to pull up the wiki. I'm already wrong.
Oh, my God, is it plural or singular?
Something. I don't know.
Stop the presses. Either way.
Singular. Ooh.
Oh, and I owe you a coat.
It is singular. What? It's your... You don't owe me anything.
You owe me something. But,
I do.
We'll talk about that later.
Actually,
what we're talking about now is the Cosmic Encounters. It's a game for, like... Up to, like, five people or something? Four or five? Yeah.
It says 3 to 6 plus. I'm skeptical
the
of
the correct number
plus,
of players is
though.
Four. Maybe five. And the idea is that you're, like, a space civilization, and you have a bunch of planets, and every other player is a space civilization, and they have a bunch of planets, and you want to steal five planets, and then you win, without getting your planet stole.
Right, and everyone has five planets, right?
Yeah.
That's part of the beginning setup. You have, like, ships and planets and cards.
Yes.
And then there's also a separate deck of cards that is the random number generator. And, yeah. Oh, also, each alien race that you can be has powers that does. So every race has, like, a unique strategy.
Yeah.
Kind of
it's
built
like,
into
in theory,
it.
You can pick which alien type you're playing as, but the cool way to do it is to just, like, draw two at random and then pick one of those. Because there's an extremely wide variety of powers and civilizations you can play as.
Yes, there are. So let's talk about base mechanics first. Like, controlling for races, like everyone's race is the same or whatever. Everybody uses these same mechanics. On your turn, you flip over the like destiny deck.
You flip over the destiny card, and that says who is the target of your ire for the turn.
If you flip green, then you attack green people. If you are green and you flip green, then you get to choose, I think.
Yeah, if you flip your own color, like you're like... Without getting too complicated, you're allowed to kick people off of your planets that they've stolen, I think. Or you can just...
Oh, really?
There's some way of making that
right.
happen. I forget.
Yeah, no, I think that... Yeah. Because first you get a chance to, like, cause an insurrection or, like, get people off the planets. And then if there's, like, none of that, then you just get to choose your target.
Yeah. So it basically gets randomly decided who you're attacking. And everyone starts off with, I want to say, 20 UFOs.
Is it four
on each? Yeah, it's four
on each. That sounds like a lot. I thought it was three
on
each.
No, it's definitely four on each.
15.
Okay. So everyone starts off with 20 UFOs. And you're allowed to send UFOs from one of your planets over to one of their planets to attack it. And you do this by positioning the cone. The cone is important. The attack isn't official... Unless you position the cone and then place your attacking
little,
ships on the cone, and then the cone is pointing at the planet you're attacking.
The warp.
Yeah,
it's
the cone. It's the cone of violence.
The cone.
And
so you choose an opponent, or rather the destiny pile chooses an opponent for you. You set it down there, and you have to put at least one ship there, attacking.
You
them.
Can put. Up to however many are on the planet you have to choose one of your planets you're attacking from. Which just, you know, you can't be sending... Or, no, actually, you can spread them out.
No,
what am I saying? I'm an idiot.
Yeah,
but you can only
you
send
just...
up to four to attack.
Yeah.
That is a rule. And then what happens is both the attacking and defending player... put a card face down. And this is their action for the combat. And there are two types of actions that you want to get worried about. There are attack actions, which have a number on them. And that number represents the strength of your attack. And the way it works, if both players play an attack action, they count up the number of ships they sent plus the attack number, and that's their side's strength, and whichever side has more strength wins.
And tie goes to...
Yeah, tie goes to defense. The losing side has all their UFOs placed in the hole, in the middle of the table.
Yes, the warp... no. Yeah, it's just the warp.
Yeah, it's a hole. See, no one dies in this game. No ships get destroyed. These ships are indestructible. Everyone figured out how to make completely indestructible ships, so then everyone invented weapons that just teleport their enemies into the hole. From which there is no escape, except when there is.
Right, but the point is, you arbitrate, win or lose, and then, loser goes to the hole. Winner either gets to, it's the defense, keep their stuff, or if the attacker wins, then they put their ships on top of that
colony. All attacking ships then land on that planet.
And that gets you a point.
That gets you a point. Because essentially each stolen planet you have is worth 1 point.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do if you don't want to play a number in combat and you want to mess with people is you can play the negotiate card. And the negotiate card automatically loses. But, well, it automatically loses to any attack number. But if you play the negotiate card and they play an attack card, you lose your ships. But then you get cards from their hand equal to the number of ships you lost.
Now, I thought that was different for the defender and the attacker. Like, I thought that if the attacker negotiates, then one thing happens, and if the defender negotiates,
another
thing happens.
I thought it was the same other way.
Or was that just because...
That was because of a goofy thing I was doing.
Oh, that was a special alien race thing. Okay, well, how about... Okay, two
negotiates. Then what happens
special for that.
Is you start the clock. The two players involved in the conflict have 1 minute to cut a deal that must somehow involve something moving somewhere. If they fail to cut a deal within a minute, then both of them put three ships in the warp.
Is it just a stock three? Or
it's a stock three.
Okay.
But
that makes more sense.
If they do come to some kind of agreement within the minute, then the agreement is carried out, and then that's the end of the conflict.
And then that's the combat. And those are the only two kinds of cards you can play, like either a number or an
N. Also, there are a couple other things. One, when a conflict happens. First, the attacker can ask for allies and they can call out certain players and say, "I want help from you." And if someone wants to ally with the attacker, they can send up to four ships. And then the defender gets to ask, "Hey, I want you to help me out." And if someone wants to, they can give the defense up to four ships. But the attacker always gets to ask first. And it's important to note that if you haven't been invited, you're not allowed to join. You're not allowed to just insert yourself in the conflict.
Right.
If you're an ally of the attacker and you win, you get to land on the planet just the same.
Yeah, so one planet can be occupied by multiple...
Yes. And that gives both
enemies,
of you a point.
As it were.
And if you help the defense and you win, I think you get to draw cards equal to the number of ships you helped with.
I can't imagine what else it would be, because there's really no...
It's some kind of fabulous card drawing reward.
Yeah.
For
either that or taking ships back from the warp.
Oh yeah, you're allowed to either, like, for each ship you helped with, you can either choose to get one ship back or draw a card. So pretty good stuff. For helping out and winning.
So, yeah, so there's incentives to help out on either side. And this... Does that happen before or after you play the face-down?
That happens before any player puts their face-down card down.
Okay.
Because
there is an order, and the order of actions is printed on the bottom of, like, every single card. And
it tells
you when it can be played.
Yeah.
So...
But just the same, if you are an ally of the losing side, you lose your ships to the warp. You got beat. Also, if both players play negotiate and they go into deal mode, all allies go home.
Yeah. Oh, the one other card that I was remembering now is the one that's not an N or a number, but it just copies what they play.
Yes, the morph.
Yeah, the morph card.
Yeah.
And what happens if you play two? If like both people play morph, because then it wouldn't have anything to copy. I'll bet it says on the card what it's supposed to be, and it probably turns into negotiate. Honestly,
maybe they both just count as adding nothing. Maybe it's double zero. Also, there are
house wins.
Reinforce cards, which are played after the face-up cards are revealed, that add an amount to one side or the other. And even if you're not an ally. You can you can play a reinforce card.
Wow, how did I not pick up on that? I guess
reinforce cards are pretty rare.
Okay.
And so these are, but then from here it's like, okay, it seems really basic. You know, you attack a guy, you play your little yomi of numbers or negotiate or whatever numbers, and then
right, and the game like. The game refills your hand. Like, there's a draw step where you just draw a card.
Yes.
There's no maximum hand size.
No, I don't think you automatically draw codes, because the way you get new codes is this. Because the deck you're drawing from, it has the attack number codes and the negotiate codes, and those are the codes you can play during combat, but other codes are played at other times. And if at any time you are in you need to play a combat code, and do not have one, you reveal your hand to prove it, then discard your hand, and then draw 7 cards.
Oh, okay. Huh.
This includes, like, if you play your last card, and it's a, you know, it's a combat card, you're playing it in combat or whatever, you still don't get to refresh your hand until the next fight you get into.
I see.
So you're sort of running on empty for a little while.
Right.
So here's where the game gets complicated. So that every race has something dumb and weird it can do, and it's great.
Yeah, so for instance, all of those rules that we said, those are all basic rules, and for almost every single one of them, there's some race that changes that, or lets you do something in addition to that. There's one that lets you see what your opponent played before you reveal yours, so you can just like they play one face down, but basically they don't because you get to look at it. And there's another one where you get to play yours face down and then not turn it over and insist that it is a certain number, so you can like legally bluff the card or whatever, and something happens if they call your bluff. There's an alien race that automatically wins if any like special power is played. Yeah, because humans are dangerous.
There's a civilization that instead of automatically losing a fight when they negotiate and the other side attacks, they automatically win.
Yeah. There's one that gets a bonus if anyone negotiates.
Oh yeah.
Let's see. Oh, there's one that simply counts up to a doomsday clock whenever a successful defense happens.
Oh, yeah.
And then they have, like, an alternate win
condition. Yes, so
like, oh, they could occupy 5 planets or doomsday clock.
Yes, there's such a wide variety.
There's one that counts down.
Yeah, there's one that,
up,
like, flips your numbers around so you reverse the digits. So a 24 is now a 42.
There's plenty that, like, do things to your hand at certain times or let you discard and then add stuff.
Yeah,
basically,
we have played quite a few games, and it's always some crazy combination of strategies and counter-strategies, and, oh god, my power helps this other guy too much. I need to, like, always be trying to ruin him, but if I...
Or there are some where it's like, oh, your power just plain counters mine.
Yeah.
Like, I had the look at someone's hand power, and someone else had the bluff power. So it just never worked. I'm like, I know that you don't have that. It's like, oh, I'd better not get in fights with you unless destiny decides.
And then, in addition, we would, I mentioned, you know, codes that are not combat codes. There are flare codes. And each flare is also tied to a certain race. And you, they say when you're allowed to play them, and they say what they do, but what's important to understand about them is that if you are the race that the flare code is for, you get a dramatically more beneficial or just powerful effect.
Anyone can play any flare, but a race that, if you play your own race's flare card, it does something better for you, and it is tailored to your race's abilities.
And it also, you get to put it back in your hand.
Oh, right, that obnoxious...
Yeah. Which, you know, eventually gets subverted by the whole rule about, you know, once you're out of combat codes... you have to drop your hand. But it still lets... There is a lot of variance in this game, but it doesn't feel random. It's weird. Everything feels pretty much fair.
I don't know, man. Maybe to you. I didn't think it felt
Maybe that's
because
I was playing as Heat Death guy.
Well, you did
win
that game.
Yeah, I did, and it was awesome.
Because of too many successful defenses. It was either myself or, like, one other, like, the player across from me who could not possibly win, but had the choice of which of my opponents won.
Yeah, okay, do sometimes get into
Yeah, because if I successfully defended, then you... Yeah, if I successfully defended, then you would win, but if I... did not successfully defend, then he would get his fifth point, and he would win. Like, I had no good answers to that one.
Yeah.
That was a neat moment. I did like that as a moment in the game, but there was, there are a couple of sticking points that I have with the game.
Right. Is there anything else we need to say about the rules? I think we've covered everything.
I'm pretty sure we.
A lot of it is that the code does what it says it does, and there are a lot of different codes.
Anything more than that, and you know, you really shouldn't like listen to us. You should go like read the Wikipedia article or pick up the game. And before I like get to the criticisms, and you just want to hear the nugget, I'll go ahead and spoil it. It's a good game, and you should, if you want to have like fun party board game time with your friends, you should get it, and it's okay. A pretty good one. I don't think it's as great as like Settlers of Catan, but it's a fair sight better than a lot of the like classic schlocky board games. I mean, I would play this many, many times before I would get bored of it enough to go play Monopoly. I even like it better than Risk. I think I can just say that flatly. It's like better than Risk. Bam! That's my recommendation as it stands before I get to little criticisms of the rules. Which are, for one, I don't like how they manage cards in hand. It's sloppy. There's an inherent kind of attrition to things. It's almost like, for instance, flare cards and the power level cards or attack cards or negotiate cards. It's almost like those things want to be in separate hands in separate decks. They don't make enough sense together in the same hand. And, you know, often you have to, like, reveal, oh, these were useless. Oh, can't use that. I just have to, you know, pass it. Like, what I'm saying, there needs to be something else there. Like, perhaps a flare card could be used as a 5 or something. You know? Like, give them a second purpose, a second life. Still with me,
yeah,
maybe not?
Yeah.
I haven't.
Well, it's like...
Oh, okay.
The thing about the way they've handled codes is that it adds tension to low-valued codes. You know, I need to get rid of this 5 at some point. You know, 5 is a pretty small number in this game. And you need to figure out when you can afford to pitch it. And you are also aware that maybe the other players have some garbage card in their hand that they need to pitch before they can get new cards.
Well, that's fine, but I feel that that's a problem separate from the fact that you have two different kinds of thing in your hand coexisting that never really serve the same purpose. I mean, we could leave the like tension of low numbers there just by having any system of both drawing and playing cards of varied values.
I guess here's what I have to say about that. Let's say we have two separate hands. Okay, we have the combat cards hand and the other stuff hand. This reveals a lot more information. Because if I, you know, get my hand, if I have a, like in the actual game, if I have a hand of six cards, I could have anywhere from one to six combat cards in that hand. You don't know how many options I have for combat and wacky stuff. If there exist a separate hand, you know how many options I have for combat and whether or not I could possibly be packing any wacky stuff.
Okay.
To conclude, I prefer the system where you cannot be as sure if your opponent is packing wacky stuff.
And yet, as it plays out, after one or two turns, you basically know anyway, and then a lot of the cards are just useless and you're stuck with them, and that feels crappy. So many of these like flare cards never come up, or they just never came up for me. I get like, oh, well, I guess that reinforce is useless. I'll just have to sit with it here. Oh, that flare doesn't ever do anything. I mean, what do we really lose with the fact that...
So your problem is more that you were running into dead cards.
I still think they shouldn't coexist in the same place. You know, screw, okay, fine. I have, like, three combat cards all the time. Everyone always has three of these and then four of something else. What does that really reveal? Because, okay, in the case where you have, like, just nothing but combat cards and you have to play one out every turn, and then you never hold a trick, and then you just, you know, chuckle, I might have a trick. Okay, but then after they play into a potential trick once and you don't have one and then you reveal nothing, they know that you have nothing but like negotiate and other stuff from then. And so the ruse is useless after one turn cycle and then you're stuck with it for seven straight turns.
Okay. So the advantage of your system is that it avoids boring, crappy scenarios like, well, I guess I need to burn through this hand that is dense on combat cards before I'm allowed to see if I can do wacky stuff.
I haven't come up with a full system for it. But I do feel that is a... It's just... It doesn't feel right. I have these two fundamentally different things in the same place, and I never really get to benefit from the bluff of you knowing or not what they are. And, you know, in the opposite scenario where, okay, the system as it stands, I have, you know, one combat card or whatever, and I play it, and then, like, next turn comes around and I need one, and I'm like, well, guess I'm pitching these six. Guess they were all useless chaff that I never got to play. It feels like I'm being punished for being dealt a hand.
Okay, so you're saying that because, I guess, like, you know, the two types of resources you're being dealt, in effect, have such drastically different purposes that when we combine them into a single deck and give you a single hand that can vary in the number of, you know, count of resource combat card and count of resource wacky card, that this leads to boring game states. And Boring Game states, you know, I'm taking that as an inherent thing to be avoided.
Yes. And in particular, not just boring, but states where you're given the illusion of choice, and it's very readily dismissed. It's like, wow, this hand is my opening hand. So much potential in all this. Oh, wait, I have a negotiate card and a bunch of other stuff. This isn't going to go well for me. I guess I'm just, I guess I'm just grumped.
Okay, how about this? Whenever you draw, like, the two decks are kept separate. Whenever you, do the hand refresh, you choose how many of each you draw.
I do like that system. I liked it enough to invent a similar one because for Magic the Gathering.
That solves your problem of, you know, the unbalanced hand while still conceding to me, like, I like hiding information. Although I guess now it's not really hidden because you saw that I drew 3 combat cards and 4 flares.
And yet you still have no idea what those, like, other cards are capable of.
And
just how many of them you have.
And the cards themselves are still varied enough that simply knowing you have 4 flares doesn't really let me know what you're capable of.
I really think you're overvaluing the, like, information
it's true.
Or mind game.
This is because I am genetically predisposed to love games of incomplete information. And the more incomplete I can make your information, the better. If I can have a game where everyone is blind and tied up, and they have to figure out who the killer is, then I'd probably get upset because that sounds really boring and hard. But my point still stands.
Okay. Okay, so that's the first thing that struck me as really kind of like systemically turgid about the whole thing. The second thing, and this is the bigger one, this is an actual grief. The other, I mean, the thing about drawing cards, it's just like, it ended up working out okay. And I probably through playing more games, I would get used to it. Or if we just, like, shuffled well enough. Or if I knew, like, if I could know the proportion of the deck that was a certain amount, you know? Because, I mean, sure, there's variance in drawing my, like, opening hand from Magic cards, too, but I built the damn deck. You know? I know how many lands are in there. Like, there was the bluffing thing was really good against me if I hadn't been that race that it's not good against at all, because I have no idea how many of what type of card value there were.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were like, wait, there's a 28?
It goes up to 28?
There's a 40? What?
The fuck?
That's so random. Is there a 27? No. But there's a 28. What? So if he says 27, that he's just lying? Okay, I'll see about that. No, but the actual grief that I have is that there are too many aliens.
Too many aliens.
God. I sat there and looked at the stack and I'm like, wait, seriously? And there's like hundreds.
Maybe thousands.
And then I looked online out of idle curiosity later, and apparently there's a whole forum dedicated to, like, coming up with new ones and comparing them at power level to the old ones, and there's an inherent system of race complexity. So there's, like, green, yellow, and red for, like, how complex the race is to implement, and generally the red ones or the more complex ones are also more powerful. It's like, generally, from what I saw flipping through them and trying my best to understand every little thing on every race card, and it's like, man. Also, the other thing is that because they are there's so many of them are kind of wacky. Like, there's one that's just called Mine. Like, they all have simple names, too. They couldn't have flavorful names, so they had to be like, you are the gambler race. You're the armorer. You're the mind. You're the hive. So you can have both hive and mind.
But never both.
No. Unless that's also a variant on the rules. Like, oh, you're two races. I rather liked that bluster thing that you had that one time. That was pretty funny. You were like the bugs.
I was the bugs with six shooters, and I forced people to, like, discard down to three before they do anything.
Yeah. Which ended up playing into that one guy.
Yeah, he gets a point every time someone refreshes their hand.
Yeah.
And I'm making everyone, like, refresh their hand, like, at best, you know, every three turns.
It vastly accelerated his victory.
Yeah. Sometimes you get into weird situations like that.
So that would be a strategy level thing. But there's way too many, and I had no idea how they could have come up with that many, right? So, okay, well, I post about how Medibot and myself and some of the other guys played Cosmic Encounter. And lo and behold, I get a reply tweet from somebody, right? And he's like, it sounds like you were playing Cosmic Encounter, right?
Run while you can!
That's weird. The internet seemed to know what I played, even though I couldn't remember the name of the game at the time. Well, I looked at the guy who had replied to my tweet, and it turns out that it is Peter Olotka, the designer of the game. He sits on Twitter and, like, maybe has, like, an alert or a running search or whatever for, like, mentions of Cosmic Encounter and tries to lead people to their Facebook page, because it's, like, facebook.com/Cosmic Encounter. He's like, check out more. We have this whole community about it. And that's, like, that's creepy.
That is very advanced.
I don't really want to be part of the community. It is quite advanced. Right? But then, you know, I get to learn about it. And part of the reason that they have so many races is that the original game came out in the 1970s. Like, they designed it forever ago. And that's also why all of these races have, like, illustration to them that look like it belongs on the cover of a prog rock album. They just kept it. So curiously enough, this future that we're looking at is the future of the 1970s, and you're traveling through time to the future of the past whenever you play this game.
Time
but
travel.
It does have a pretty neat history to it, and I invite you to look at, well, basically the same basically the same Wikipedia page that I'm cribbing off of right now. But I was pretty fascinated to learn that there it is, like, built in the 1970s.
This
well
game is older than
alive.
Four of me put together.
That's not true.
Well, I didn't say how we were put together.
Yeah, four of you would just be the same age as you. Happy birthday.
Ah, thank you.
Ah, yes.
Always. Happy unbirthday, Kaz.
Indeed. How did you know?
I checked my unbirthday calendar. It's very full.
But yeah, the designer himself, albeit with the kind of creepy tweet, which I'll, you know, forgive him of, you know, I would be happy about designing this game too. He has this long history of designing, like, custom games for public television stuff. You know how you would watch, like, Magic School Bus or something, and then, like, in the early days of Flash or whatever, when this kind of shit was new, they would say, oh, did you like the episode? Why not log on to our website and play the free game? And they would have, like, some free game. Cartoon Network did the same thing. They would just have, like, a free game that went along with every one of their shows. Yeah, this guy designed, like, all of those for WGBH Boston and for other, like, public television stations.
God bless public television.
Yeah.
He has done a service.
Kind of it's almost like all these people only know of one game designer, and it's like, oh, yeah, let's get Peter to do it.
Well, I mean, like, first he was just, like, making coffee for us, but then, you know, he whipped this out over the weekend, so now we just get him to do it.
Yeah, apparently, I didn't know that you could do that with HyperCard or whatever, but there it was. He does this
computers
in his spare time.
Are amazing, man.
But no, I mean, he is an accomplished game developer and designer, and there he was replying to my tweet. It was humbling.
About the game he made for you.
Yeah. The service what you sell. That's pretty exciting.
Maybe I, too, will one day make a game that a person plays and posts about on Twitter.
Yeah, well then, if you do, we can cast about it.
No. You'll hate it.
Yes. Well, that doesn't stop me from casting about things.
I know, but I'll feel bad.
I mean, what was that goofy Stepmania game that you...
What, Sequence?
Sequence.
Yeah, that game was rad. I didn't make it.
No, I mean, I felt it was a good game, but I didn't like it.
That's... Okay.
I cast about it, because it was interesting. It's I want to separate in your mind the necessity to, like, always do the Skulls cast about a topic that we're interested in or enjoy. I think all it really needs to be is something that we can both discuss or talk about. Just us hanging out.
Skulls discussion. Casual discourse.
Casual Skulls.
Skulls. Was that the end? Okay.